Good afternoon. I'm Kate Manahan. Thank you for joining me for the 117th edition of New Mainers Speak. This is a weekly half-hour program where you can hear firsthand about the lives of some of Maine's immigrants. During this show, we visit with individuals regarding their life stories and enduring hopes as New Mainers. Today, my guest is Quan Mulwal. He was raised in Lur, a town of about 10,000 people in what is now South Sudan. He arrived in Maine in 2002, coming by way of Cairo, Egypt. Quan learned English, became a linguistic translator in the U.S. Army, and was deployed to Iraq in 2009. Presently, Quan is frequently in the news as the leader of the South Sudanese community of Maine, trying to raise awareness about the devastation in his native South Sudan, and he works as an advocate for his community's interest in local politics. Welcome to New Mainers Speak, Quan.
Well, thanks for having me.
Such a pleasure on this rainy Sunday. So tell us a little bit about your childhood in Lur. I wonder if you can describe how life was different there for you than it is here for your children.
Well, I'm sure it's a very big difference. Growing up in Lur, with limited sources for a child or for any kids, not just myself, but it's something that kind of go across the nation as well. So there's a big difference. You know, I could always imagine, you know, seeing the thing that my kids are having from the thing that I haven't gone through. And my son and I, we always try to make a joke. I was like, I used to make my own toy. So I was my own designer for my own toy. And unlike here, you know, it's a big difference. Yeah, big difference. Yeah.
Yeah. Were there any paved roads in your hometown?
No, I mean, I can't even. Maybe throughout my 7 years as a child, maybe I see a car one time.
Oh, that's a little different.
It's a big difference. It's a big difference, and you know, we try to trace the tires marks after their departure, and then we just kind of chase it for a while. And then you ended up realizing you're in a different town. Just like, oh, I got to go back home.
Oh, that's really interesting. So you were tracking.
We are tracking the vehicle, the tires mark.
So. You were using the skills you had.
No.
No?
You know, I wish I didn't thought of it. It was just something I was kind of curious as a child. It wasn't that I was trying to see what it is, but it's just the fact that it was, you know, you see the mark go with the same without change. For quite a while, it was strange, you know, growing up in an area where there's no cars or not familiar with the tires.
Yeah, yeah. I love that. What a great story. And what was school like for you? Was it in a building?
Well, school was different. School from where I grew up, which is something that I was not introduced into. But after a few years, maybe in the mid-80s, we moved to the north. And that's where I was introduced. Of course, the north looked totally different from the south. That's when Sudan used to be as a country before they split.
It was the biggest country in the
world.
Right,
it was the biggest in the Africa as a.
Oh yes, in Africa.
Yeah, in Africa. Yeah. And so we went to the north, which is totally different things. We happened to be seeing some different thing that we were not familiar with. Of course, the language itself was a big change. So I have to, being a newer speaker as a child, so I have to learn how to speak Arabic, and that's what. So it kind of changed my livelihood in terms of being a farming boy to school boy.
City boy.
Yeah, city boy. So it was different.
Well, it's kind of good that you did that because you learned how to adapt to a new environment, which then you were able to apply later in Cairo and again in Biddeford, Maine.
Well, you know, it was good because, I mean, like, given just as a citizen of South Sudan, Sudan as a whole back then, you just can't find your way to try to fit in. And the only way you could do that, you have to learn the language that is spoken on the street. regardless if you're going to school or you're working, you have to learn it. And which is the same thing when I came to Maine back in 2002. It was kind of the same challenging in terms of trying to fit in, learn how to speak, and all that stuff.
Yeah, you'd had those positive experiences. That's really great. So your dad worked for Pepsi Company, and your mom in a city hall type situation. So were you a child of more means than the others in your community? Were you wealthier as a family?
I wouldn't say we were wealthy. I mean, I can see the struggle. But, you know, the fact that my folks were having a decent a job that providing for the family, maybe not to the extent that we can say we're living in our own home. We were not living in our home, but somebody was able to give us a home and say, you live here. So the only thing my folks were doing was to provide meal for us and make sure that the water I'm being cut off, you know, paying those type of small bills. But the home was for free from a decent human being with a lot of kindness. And we stayed there for many, many years. I still call it a home, even though my folks doesn't own it. So I'm hoping someday if I go back, I'm going back to the same house. But we were not that, my folks, they weren't that rich. It was an average family who tried to survive. And my mom wasn't making money mostly. So my dad was the only one who has a pay that was guaranteed because he got up every morning, go to work, and come back in the evening. So we kind of guaranteed his pay, but it was not enough. And we also try to have some newcomer from our back home, which is South Sudan, to our home. And sometimes they would stay there for a while, not knowing their way around or where to live. So my father, right. So my father kind of provided for everybody in the house.
That's great. And yeah. Did you always have Pepsi?
You know, Pepsi was, you know, it was like my ibuprofen.
Was it? You had access to it?
So I have to make a complaint that I think I'm not feeling good and Pepsi will solve my problem.
That's funny.
And that's one thing that I had a Pepsi here and there, but I wasn't really a big fan of Pepsi like my brother was. My brother was, yeah, he was.
A Pepsi addict.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. He's,
I mean, what did your dad do for Pepsi?
Well, what they do is I met his work a few times, and it was fascinating to watch, you know, seeing those bottles running through line, and then some of them would fall down. And so he was running this machine that filled the – he was running two. One of them put the cap on the bottle, and the other one filled them up, and then he would grab them. So he's just kind of like monitoring the belt.
An assembly line.
Yeah, an assembly line. Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Were you a young child when the second South Sudanese civil war broke out in 83?
In 83, I was very, very young. I was 4 years old, very young, but didn't really know that much about it. But I can sense in some area that they will give a neighborhood a warning, say, hey, there's a war coming, and you guys have to evacuate to some safe area. So that was the sense that I got out of it, but I didn't really see how much the consequences, the casualty and all this stuff, so I wasn't aware of that. But I remember one night we have to evacuate at night, and we left all the cows there, and we went to a different town, and I can still picture that town, and we went that town. And that town, too, they were evacuating before we even got there, so there were nobody there, and there were just cattle. And we stayed there for, I don't know how many days was it, but it was a long time, and I can see myself waking up in the morning in a totally different town.
That would be eerie.
Totally. I mean, you know, it's tough, but, you know, just kind of like being in the same kind of life, you really don't see anything that you could have done differently than just, you know, moving to some safer and hoping that you would go back to your town when things calm down.
And were your cows alive when you returned home?
Some of them were missing. some of them were missing. We didn't have them all around. So,
Which is a big loss.
It is. It is a loss. But, you know, the good thing about it, it's easy to track cows regardless of the size of the neighborhood because you know your cow based on every mark in them, so you know who has it, and you can look it up. So it shouldn't take you more than 14 days to solve that case.
How nice! So growing up, you heard stories about the United States and you saw images and movies from here. I wonder how those images inspired you and why you picked the United States as your destination with other choices.
Well, I mean, you know, as a child, of course, you always try to look into those toughness, personality or approaching and intensity fight. You don't know what the consequences out of it. You just think it's excited, and you just want to be part of it. And it did not really happen to me until, like, I reached the age of 16, 17, when I tend to kind of enjoy more of seeing the action movies are more interesting and excited to be, you know, guys with big shoulders. And of course, looking at myself, I can, right. I don't really see myself being big as that guy, but it was just something to kind of watch over the years and just like, you know what, I think I can do this myself. So when I came to Egypt is when I told my friend, I was like, I didn't know I was going to come to America. So I said, well, when I go to America, I'm going to join the United States Army. And my friend, you know, we were making a joke, just like any normal setting, group of young boys. And I was like, no, you're not going to make it. Your case will not be accepted at the UN or through the vetting processing. Some of them were denied. And so they were convinced that I will not be accepted. And I was like, no, I am. I will be accepted and I'll be going to America. I don't go to Canada or Australia because I just thought the military has more of a... the kind of intensity that I want to be part of, not particularly the uniform, but it's just the gun was my
that was exciting. When
was
you
my
were
motivation
a
to carry one? Yeah,
yeah. So, can you think of the movie that inspired you? Were you watching Arnold Schwarzenegger?
Oh yeah, I watched that man so many times, and Chuck Norris, what's his name?
Yeah,
I watched a lot of his movie. But, you know, just, yeah, it was very...
Those are tough guys.
Very tough guy, yeah.
And now you're a citizen, a father, a veteran, a community leader. Will you vote in the upcoming election?
I told my friend I made my mind before the year of 2016, and I know who I will be voting for whatever reasons, and people can watch debate all they want. I already made my mind, so...
Yeah, I think a lot of people have made their minds up at this point. Have you voted for a presidential election before?
I did.
Yeah, so yeah. This is your second cycle?
That's my second, yeah.
Great. And are there any certain issues that you're most interested in during this election cycle?
Well, you know, I mean, so whatever we hear from the campaign trail, it's all promises. And a lot of them will not work. Now you're just going to go to the very average thing that you think could be solved. And that's the job. You know, other than that, I just don't really see anything that could be solved in any time sooner than later. You know, it's either you fight war or you don't fight war. You fix the economy or you don't fix the economy. Those are the two things that are fixable, regardless of who's coming into the power. And you can fix those in one term. And those are the things that motivate me to vote for my candidate.
Great. Yeah. I'm glad you're active in the political process. From your South Sudanese community, are there a lot of voters?
Well, there's a lot of voters. And that's one of the things that, you know, our community have. And we try to push that through the lawmakers that, hey, we want to be represented when you're making laws. I want you to think of me as a Mainer rather than immigrant. Think of me as a Mainer who can go and vote for things that you may be, you know, supporting. And I'll vote against it. And, we have a lot of voting people, and the mayoral election was a good turnout from our community. I was pleased myself to see people go in and vote, but you know they try to take it not to use it, and it's one of the things that I say. You know what? I will work on this part, try to mobilize people, and say, hey, go vote. They may not like my candidate, but you know they can always go and vote for whoever they want to vote for, Because the idea of what do we want as a community is who's going to represent us and think of us when they make law that could be harmful to our community.
Wonderful. You're listening to WMPG. If you're just joining us, welcome. This is New Mainer Speak. I'm Kate Manahan, and my guest today is Kwan Mawlal. He is the current leader of the South Sudanese Community Association of Maine, located at 500 Forest Avenue in Portland. Quan, tell us a little bit about your organization, which has been around for the past 20 years in Maine. What are some of the goals that you're consistently working toward as a community of people?
Well, I mean, the community, South Sudanese community, it used to be Sudanese community back when it was established in 1996, having before the country split it. So, and then we recently, after the country become apart from the north, and then we've the same group, they just kind of merged the name into to where their country turned out to be after the separation.
Just a little caveat there. 2011.
2011.
Sudan became its own
independent.
And more recently, you all have made a similar division.
Right. So that here. Right. So after the 2011, people thought of, okay, well, we cannot maintain the same name as Sudanese community because now we have two political party country that totally could operate in a different way. So it would be hard to mobilize the same people in the same old-fashioned name because the southern would feel like, oh, well, how about my country? And then the north would say, well, how about mine?
Sure, your country got renamed.
Right. So, so and people try to avoid that such of an argument, and then we people just departed from. So we know each other. I mean, we're still doing our thing together. The North and the South Sudanese in Maine still collectively work together. I have a few friends of mine that I still go to their home and they come to my house. So that relationship has not shifted. It's just the name kind of changed it. And we try to say, you know, names could, it's just a name. You can change that anytime you want. You know, you and should not a big deal. It's just how we treated each other. As a community.
And you have a big Christmas celebration coming up, I understand.
We have a Christmas Christmas Eve. That's when we want to do a community gathering. And hopefully we'll be joined by other communities as well. The New Hampshire area, the Boston area, a few from Vermont. We try to come together and just kind of cheer and celebrate.
And dance.
Oh, yeah. We will try to put in some few culture dance. And for those of you who may be interested in seeing some of those culture, please stop by.
That's beautiful. I love your open inclusion invitation. I know that you do a lot of advocacy on behalf of the South Sudanese community, as well as helping individuals from the community. Can you share some of the kinds of things that you get to do on a regular basis as the leader of your community?
Well, I mean, like maybe a few advantages that I may have or I promise that I will be doing for the community is the awareness. A lot of things that are happening, it's just their lack of communication mostly. I happen to be in some of those areas. I was telling, I was arrested back in 2004 for a violation. I was working at 4 in the morning delivering papers, the Portland Press Herald. And then I was followed over by an officer, and for some reason I ended up being in jail for it. And then now thinking about it back, I was like, oh, you know, that could have just be solved. It was the simple things, but it has to do with the communication was totally different. I thought if I had communicated better, things would have gone in a better way, or if the officer would have taken the second step, I'd say, you know what, maybe this guy just doesn't understand what I'm saying. So let's find out different ways to try to solve this case rather than just arresting him. So I felt like two things could be done that time, myself or the officer. And myself, basically, I couldn't do anything because the language barrier was my one of my issues. And not understanding the law. So some of the things that I try to advocate for the community is reaching out for, where this public services are providing. And we just urge people that to try to take that second step further than your normal step, which is the first one. And because a lot of immigrants may not be understanding to what you are approaching them with in terms of housing, health issues. You know, you could always say you have a headache, and maybe it's not a headache. Maybe somebody was going through depression. You know, you try to find out some more. So if you happen not to understand that person for whatever reason, seek for different help. Get a translator. There's people out there that could help. I was recently helping a young fellow from Waterville area. I never met him before, but I speak Arabic, so they called me and say, do you speak Arabic? And I was able to help in that area. And problem was solved, and those kind of things that we try to advocate for others area as well. The city hall was one of them. The mayor is in very good connection with the immigrant community, which is a positive thing. And we'll continue to do that. And hopefully, as a Mainer, we'll continue to say we are Mainer. You know, we're not just a set. We're not a people who are coming here for short term and then leave. I believe I'm a settler. Been in the army. I've been to a few states, and every time I'm in somewhere down south or west, I just wanted to come home and chill, regardless of the snow and all that stuff. But I just it's a home to many of us.
I think that's a really important word, home. Yeah. And you know, when you feel that feeling of ease and belonging, that's your home.
It is my home, and it is my home. Regardless of my skin color, this is my home, and I'm proud of it.
So. Good for you. I love it. And would you ever consider running for public office?
Public office. Well, I mean, you know, public office, I don't know how people see it. Totally happen to be seeing it in a different way. I was telling my friend a few days ago that serving in the public office nowadays, it's about gaining wealth. It's not about serving the interests of the person. People running for office just to be rich.
At a state level, too?
Across the country. It is across the country. Mm-hmm. State level, to you named it. It's all about personal gain. It's not mostly. That's how I see it. Mm-hmm. And maybe people are doing it a different way, but.
You'd like to see more service.
I would like to see more service rather than just say, you know what, try to make a political point to better your side rather than say, how can we solve these issues? It's a problem. How do we solve it? And then, you know, party line. You talk about Republican and Democrat fighting each other from the city level. Forget about the city level. They could fight that way. And it's sad. And it's basically shifting the way people think, the way we judge those who are running for public office. So I feel like I'm too conservative when it comes to making choices. So even I were to run for any public office, I wouldn't win it because I like the old-fashioned way where you do things with a sense and a meaningful way that not just for you but to better others.
Hmm. Yeah. Presently, the situation in the young country of South Sudan is very dangerous. What can you tell us about what's going on there? And what should every Mainer know about South Sudan in 2016?
Well, one of the things that, if you have any friend that happened to be in that country, South Sudan, just know that they're going through a lot and things could go wrongly. We talk about people mourning in the community. It's a weekly thing from crises that are taking place back home. So people are affected with the thing that are happening in the country. But one of the things that we also try to do is, spread the awareness, especially to our lawmakers who happen to be involved in a bigger deal than the one we do. But the awareness is something that we can do as a state and pass that along to our lawmaker, knowing that these people need help. And I was just I made a small video a few weeks ago, and I was talking about the long-term and short-term help. The short-term help, we can bring immigrant here. That's the short-term. The long-term help is what make these people leave their country. That's what we need to find out.
Peace,
and,
right.
Right, you know. The stability, they don't have stability in their country. So if you bring two today, guess what? You're going to bring another two tomorrow, and then the next. You're not solving their problem. So I thought it's better for our country, or the U.S. as a whole, to look into the bottom piece of this. You know, the same thing fighting drug. You cannot just go and get the guy who consumed the drug. Find the guy who sold the drug, and then you're going to solve it. And I think it's the same thing that a lot of countries, Syria is one of them, South Sudan is the country, Somalia, Congo. I mean, you talk about Congo. The Congo issue started in 1965 and until today, 1965. So if we were solving a problem, it would have solved by now. So you talk about Lyndon Johnson time. That's just, I don't know how many presidents is in that area, but it's it's a fact that we not try to solve the bottom case, rather we try to grab it from the top and just like, okay, we'll take portion from it and hopefully the rest will fix itself. I think we are a nation where we get to some point, you know, being in the military myself, you know, people can join the military for many different reasons. But when you cross that ocean, it's not, you know, it's not about earning money. It's not. And my pay grade was one thing that I was not thinking about when I was in Iraq. So it just, you know, I was thinking about my life. But mostly I was more tougher than just knowing that I'm here to help somebody who may need help was more than just anything.
Yeah. You're really committed to serving your people.
I am, and it's something that I take very seriously. And it hurts sometimes. You can see the shame, but sometimes you can see the block, the obstacles of not doing it. And it touches, and I take it very personally.
Yeah. And you have more than one community. That's both the South Sudanese community, the Maine community, the American community.
I have a lot of them, and I take them personally from my heart. And whichever one I serve, they will have my 101% promise that I will do it.
That's beautiful. What would be the best response that the world community could have towards South Sudan at this time, in your opinion? I like what you're saying, and I know that only 1% of refugees get resettled, and I also know that South Sudan joined this year, unfortunately, Syria, Afghanistan, and Somalia as places with more than 1 million refugees. This is a really big deal. You're saying, let's solve the problem so we don't have people, millions of people leaving their homes. What could we do?
Well, I always thought the administration is not doing enough to solve this problem. And we have the capability of doing it. We have a capability of changing leadership. We have a capability of stopping bad guys from doing whatever. But it's just like, are we committed to do it, or are we just playing politics? Because if you play in politics, you're not going to solve it. But if you just say, you know what, I want to solve this regardless of legacy. I mean, who cares? You're just helping people. That should be the legacy. The legacy is not that you have not done this or you have done this. The legacy is, have you done something for people that you're serving? And I think we're kind of drifting into that. We're kind of more into legacy than saying, I did this and I did that. And that's bad. I think the American politics is changing so much in a way that you just sometimes don't even know the lawmakers are serving the people. You don't know that. And the good part is people now happen to see candidate based on what they say, rather than 10 years ago, American people, they vote by name. If they like your name, you get their vote. That's how people used to vote. And today it's changed a little bit. The media, it's become more sources of spreading the news out. But the long term is what I think should be done. And we're capable of doing it. We could do it with any country. We have the power, either by negotiating or by fighting it. And, you have one of two choices. You either accept the negotiation or accept the force. The first is not the first option, but mostly it's a better option, because then instead of serving one person, you're going to be saving 10 people by putting force in there. And I think the administration or whoever coming up next should see into the bottom of it, rather than just grab it from the top.
Kwan, you continue to attend to short and long term goals for the people of the South Sudanese community of Maine and Americans in general. I know you devote a terrific amount of time and attention to people to help navigate some rather complicated systems here in Maine, such as housing, courts, schools, and more. And I'm sure your generous efforts make a huge difference to many people. Thank you so much for being my guest today.
Well, thank you for having me, and I'm delighted to be back here with the WMPG radio station. I could not be any more happy than this, and I appreciate you all taking time to listen to my side of view and how I think of how things should be run, and people can get help they need it.
My pleasure. You're very welcome. I'm Kate Manahan in the studio with my guest Kwan Mulwal. Would you be so kind, Kwan, as to introduce the song you selected to close today's program?
Yes, please. Please join me and listen to some of Willie Nelson.
One of your personal favorites.
Oh, yeah, I love Willie Nelson. It's the voice, the wording itself, it's just so touching. It doesn't matter how old you are. You're going to love it.
Great. This is called More Than One Way to Cry.
If I don't stay at home all alone, and if I'm out with the crowd, until dawn. If I wear a smile and though my eyes are dry, there's more than one way to cry. There's more than one kind of lonesome, and there's more than one shade of blue. There's more than one brand of heartache, and there's more than one way of missing you. Some may cry their pillow full of tears, while others cry and sigh throughout the year. There are many ways to face reality, and who's to say what way's the best for me? 'Cause there's more than one kind of lonesome, and there's more than one shade of blue. There's more than one brand of heartache, and there's more than one way of missing you.